Chapter 5, Day 256. Theda Old Town, 0010. The address she'd been given was a merchantman's house on the Genstall, one of a row of elderly mansions on a broad pavement. Many were boarded up now, thanks to the war, but adjacent blocks of cheap habs showed that the area's fortunes had been in decline for some time. Jagdeer brought the staff car she'd borrowed to a halt, switched off the engine, and got out. Lights burned brightly around the shutter edges of the house she was looking for. Nervously adjusting her uniform, she hurried up the front steps. Was that singing she could hear? She found an iron bell pull and yanked on it. Service bells tinkled far away in the house. After a moment, the door opened. The hallway inside was dimly lit. She found herself facing a high-function domestic servitor, its silver form engraved with intricate chasework.
"Oh," she said, surprised. "I was looking for... Is this 133 Genstall?"
"Yes, Commander," it replied,
digitizing the gentle-mannered voice of an elderly male through its voxponder. The servitor had recognized her rank.
"I'm looking for the billet used by the Apostles, the 101.
"Please come in," the servitor said.
It was definitely singing she could hear in the background. A recording of Franz Talfa's Gaudete Terra, with male voices booming along.
"Follow me," the servitor said. "May I ask your name, Commander?"
"Jagdeer," she replied.
The servitor's exquisite silver hands reached out and smoothly opened a double set of panelled doors, letting through a bright glow light and the full force of the music.
"Commander Jagdeer," it announced.
The singing stopped, but the music languished on, fizzing slightly through the speaker horn of the recording player on a side table. Seacan rose out of an armchair to greet her.
"Good evening, Commander."
Around the room were the other six apostles. All of them, Seacan included, were wearing full-dress uniforms, heavy with medals. They had glasses in their hands and had obviously been drinking for a while. Faces were flushed, and jackets undone. Seacan looked as fresh as a night frost.
"I'm sorry," Jagdeer said. "I'm interrupting."
"Not at all," said Seacan.
"Domo, a drink for the Commander."
The servitor crossed immediately to a lacquered drink stand.
"Is this the Fantine leader?"
one of the apostles asked. He was a big man, his eyes red and hooded from too many amasecs.
"It is indeed, Ludo. Commander Jagdeer, may I present Major Ludo Ramier?"
"Mamselle,"
the big man nodded.
"Major Zina Crone? Major Jerick Sewer?"
Sewer was a sharp-faced, skinny man. He nodded curtly. Crone was of noble build, a Glavian, perhaps, by the look of his gleaming black skin. His face was badly scarred on the left cheek. He too nodded, then busied himself changing the recorder disc.
"Captain Guise Gettering?"
Gettering was pugnacious and jowly, with short, sand-white hair. He was standing by the hearth, a crystal balloon in his hand.
"Mamselle Commander," he grunted.
"And Major Dario Quint."
Quint, ace of aces, reclined in a battered tub chair in the far corner. He seemed more like an observer than a participant. He was a surprisingly small man, well-proportioned, compact, his oval face boyish, though his hair was zinc-grey. His hands were folded across the breast of his uniform jacket. He stared directly at her and held her gaze, though he made no sound. The servitor handed Jagdeer a flute of joylick, and she took it even though she didn't want it.
She began, and cleared her throat. "I thought it was appropriate for me to come here in person and express my wing's appreciation for your assistance, especially given the cost."
"You lost a machine too, didn't you?"
Ramier asked.
"Yes, I did. But the loss of an apostle..."
Ramier snorted.
"Halson was an odious shit. He couldn't fly worth a fart."
Jagdeer was startled.
What?"
"Detestable man," Sir agreed. "Don't look so bloody shocked, mamselle. Halson was all luck and flair. Not a gram of skill in his whole body. It's a miracle he lasted as long as he did."
Jagdeer frowned. She put her drink down, untouched, and said,
"I wanted to express my appreciation and my sympathies. I've done that now, so I think I'll go."
"Saving the neck of that upstart boy, wasn't he?"
Gettering asked suddenly. Jagdeer paused and turned back.
"What?"
"Halson got stung getting a razor off that boy of yours, mamselle."
"Isn't that right?"
"The boy who thought naming his machine Double Eagle was a bright idea."
That matter is over and done, Captain, though I believe Pilot Officer Markwell is still waiting on your letter of apology. And no, you're not right. Markwell had already shaken the razor.
Had he now? Said Gettering.
He used his rocket assist, said Sir.
Did he? Gettering laughed.
Ramier chuckled too.
So the boy was your casualty?
No, said Jagdeer. Markwell recovered control of his machine. There was a look on Gettering's face that suggested he was about to accuse her of lying. Instead, he just shook his head and looked away. The recorder started blaring again. Crone had put on Nuncius's Salve Beatus, loud and strident. Jagdeer walked out of the room.
Commander, Seacan caught up with her in the hall. Behind him, the drunken singing had resumed.
You'll have to forgive my men, Commander Jagdeer. They're dealing with their loss in their own way.
By throwing a boorish party and defaming the dead man?
Pretty much, said Seacan.
Sentiment does not figure largely in the souls of those men, Jagdeer. They're steeped in death, immune to its touch.
Clearly not immortal, she snapped.
No, that's not what I meant. Your unit now. I imagine there's sadness, low spirits, mourning the loss of a friend.
Jagdeer nodded. That was exactly the mood in the billet when she'd left. A few were raising a glass of Cloven's shade, but there was a general numbing gloom.
I remember that myself, Seacan said, in the early days. But we apostles are war-weary. When I said we are immune to the touch of death, I meant we just don't feel its bite anymore. No sense of grief, no loss, no regret, no sadness. Just an inevitability. When an apostle dies, we put on our dress white and our ridiculous numbers of medals, and we get filthy drunk. We rage, we sing, we drink some more. We do it to show fate or fortune or whatever else lurks out there in the dark that we don't care.
She had no reply. His voice dropped slightly.
We're freaks, Jagdeer. Do you know why we're apostles? Not because we're especially fine pilots. Not at all. We're apostles because we've had unnatural luck. We should have died long ago, but there's been some oversight, and our souls have not been claimed. So we go on flying and killing, and eventually the oversight is corrected. Today it was Harlson's turn.
That's a very bleak view, said Jagdeer. Was Harlson really that disliked?
Who knows? Probably not. He was a reasonable pilot. But none of us are friends, you see. There's no point. By the time you become an apostle, friends are a vulnerability none of us chooses to afford.
I pity you, Jagdeer said.
Seacan shrugged his shoulders.
We don't need pity either.
He paused.
Do you know what I have to do tomorrow morning?
No.
My driver's taking me down to the coast, to Medenta MAB. There's a pilot station there with the 567th. His name's Saul Kirkson. 72 kills, superb service record. I will be inviting him to fill Halson's spot.
Will he accept? She asked.
If you are invited to become an apostle, Jagdeer, you're not allowed to decline.
She opened the front door. The night air was cold and smelled of rain. From the drawing room behind them, the raucous singing swelled to a lusty chorus.
Thank you for your pains, Commander, Seacan said. They're not as unappreciated as you might think.
Jagdeer made a quick, clipped salute. Good flying, she said. Coast Highway, 0550. At first he thought it was a summer storm, glimmering the edges of the pre-dawn sky with sheet lightning. It took him a few moments to realize it wasn't. He brought his heavy transport to a full stop and jumped out onto the rock-crete surface of the hardtop, his scope in his hand. The other seven trucks in the convoy grumbled to a halt behind him. The convoy was an overnight munitions delivery to Fatona MAB, already overdue. A couple of the drivers sounded their horns, revved their stacks. Finally, they dismounted too. They found Kaminsky on the far side of the highway, near to where the pelmet of the road track shelved away into a dry creek bed. This area of the peninsula was barren. Straw grasses, fiberweed, salt bars dotting the broken ground. Even in the cold half-light of dawn, there was nothing to spoil the view all the way to the Leader Valley. Kaminsky was winding his scope.
"What the hell's going on?"
asked Veligin.
"Kaminsky, what's the problem?"
said Andacek from behind him.
"See that?" Kaminsky asked. "That glow. Fire patterns. Towns along the Leader are being bombed."
Theda MAB South, 0617. There was something big going on. Darrow had slept badly, aware of a huge launch activity during the small hours. He'd been working late on the report Eads had asked him to write up, and with an hour and a half to go before his next shift at operations, he went out to find Heckel to get the Major's comments on the tangle they'd had with the White Bat. A pall of exhaust fumes hung in the still air over the field. The majority of the base's machines were gone, on sorties. Darrow spoke to a Commonwealth fitter he knew, and the man told him bombing raids had begun north of the mountains. River towns had been hit. Agro centres. Mills. Someone reckoned the raiders had got as far as Ezraville. Everyone he passed looked pinched and worried. Everyone was thinking the same thing. This was the start of the end. Even Commonwealth reserve units like Quarry Flight were on standby. Morose, in full flight armour, they lurked in the dispersal areas, waiting for the call. Wolf cubs were being fitted to their ramps. Cyclones were being wheeled out of the housing barns, attended by fueling trucks and munition trains. Heckel? No one had seen him, and no one was in the mood to chat for long. According to the posts, Heckel should have been amongst the standby pilots. Darrow got a room number and headed down to the blast-proof hab block at the west end of the dispersal yards. By the light of the dingy corridor lamps, he found the right door and knocked. "Major? Major Heckel? Are you there, sir?" He knocked again. "Major Heckel? It's Darrow. Have you got a minute, sir?" He was about to turn away, but an ominous feeling made him try the door. It was unlocked. In the narrow room, the cot was unmade. There was a clutter of papers and possessions on the small desk, clothes laid out on top of the officer's trunk. A camp chair lay on its side in the middle of the room. Major Heckel had hanged himself by a harness strap from the ceiling bracket.
"Oh, God, Emperor!" Darrow cried.
He rushed forward, seizing the Major's legs, struggling to lift him down and ease the constriction.
"Help me! Someone help me!"
he shouted out. He couldn't unhook the body. Heckel was a lead weight. Darrow cried out in frustration. He let go, found Heckel's kit knife in the pile on the trunk, then righted the chair and climbed up, sawing at the harness cord. It was aviation issue, tough, and designed not to break. Darrow yelled out again and cut his fingers on the knife as he wrenched it back and forth against the thick fabric.
"Don't you die! Don't you die!" he bawled. "How dare you do this, Heckel? How bloody dare you!"
Darrow was vaguely aware of two aviators coming in, drawn by his yells. He heard their appalled cries. They grabbed Heckel's legs and raised him.
"Cut it! Cut it!"
one shouted.
"I'm trying!
The harness parted. Heckel fell heavily into the arms of the other men, knocking Darrow off the chair and onto the cot. They wrestled the noose off his neck and started emergency resuscitation. Darrow got up and dropped the knife. He knew they were wasting their time. The lividity around the neck, the pallor of the cheeks, the cyanotic blue of the lips.
"You poor bastard," Darrow sighed. "You poor, stupid bastard."
In his efforts to perform chest compressions, one of the men had dislodged an envelope from Heckel's flight jacket. Darrow picked it up. The envelope was blank, as if Heckel had been unable to think of anyone to address it to. Inside was a single sheet of paper, inscribed with a single handwritten sentence.
"May the God Emperor forgive me. I cannot do this any more."